Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Some chef just told me not to be a prick. Well, you'll have to hear all about it, so just sit back and...
One, two, three, listen.
If you're willing to talk, Father Leo is willing to listen. Get ready for a deliciously deep discussion of Shoot the Shiitake with Father Leo.
And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, your host, Father Leo, for a heartwarming, inspiring, encouraging, and even surprising episode for me. I'm speaking with Chef Brandon Krastowski, who is the president and CEO of Edwin's Leadership Institute and Restaurant, and you will hear why I am interviewing him, as well as how he is certainly part of the picture in what I'm doing as a priest and as a cook, but also, more importantly, as someone who has a responsibility to bring people to the table. So enjoy this deep dish discussion, and we will be right back with more Shoot the Shiitake and Chef Brandon Krastowski. This episode is brought to you by thetablefoundation.org. It is my nonprofit group that has one mission, and that is to harvest the power of food to do good. Learn more and support us at thetablefoundation.org. And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake. With me, your host, Father Leo. I have got with me Chef Brandon Krastowski. I hope I said that well. He is the founder, president, and CEO of Edwin's Leadership and Restaurant Institute. And he was actually recently in the Baltimore area premiering his Academy-nominated short documentary film called Knife Skills. So first of all, Chef, thank you for joining me for breakfast.
You're welcome.
So just to set the scene, it is kind of hazy. We're overlooking the harbor, and we were talking that this feels a little bit like Cleveland, where you're from. Tell me about, like, where Edwin's, this Leadership and Restaurant Institute, is located.
Yeah, absolutely. We're Cleveland, Ohio. We're right on the far east side in a place called Shaker Square. Is actually the second outdoor mall in the United States.
Nice.
So it's got a lot of history inside of it, but it's also on the cusp of a very well off neighborhood.
Yeah.
And then just a few blocks away, a very very poor neighborhood. So we're right in the crossroads of two interesting cultures.
Yeah, and you made that comment as we were walking through Baltimore. There's just almost a diversity of rich and poor.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they're coming together, and you decided to bring them all together under the guise of French culinary restaurant, right? So, I mean, tell us about your vision of what Edwin's is currently, mm-hmm. and what you want it to be, and where it came from.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the whole idea came from a break when I was younger. I was facing 5 to 10 years in prison while sitting in jail.
Can I ask you for what?
Sure. Yeah, the charge that could get to stick was fleeing and eluding, but we were just causing trouble at the time with things we shouldn't have had. Leaving a scene can cause you to go to prison for quite some time.
But you were from the Detroit area, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. So I was 18 years old, now 38.
Wow.
So it gave me a perspective on what freedom is.
Sure.
You really know what freedom is until you lose it.
Sure.
But that was a long time ago. On probation, I met a chef in downtown Detroit. He mentored me, taught me the fundamentals.
Who was that chef?
Chef George Clergis.
Okay.
Yeah. Rosada was the name of the restaurant. And so those fundamentals in culinary arts and hospitality led me to the CIA in New York.
Nice.
I worked under Charlie Trotter in Chicago.
Big name.
He's a legend. I ended up working in two places in France, but the most well-known was a Michelin three-star called Lucas Carton under Alain Cendrons, another industry great who redefined the haute cuisine. And then it was Manhattan, where I thought I'd be the best chef in the world because, you know, we know the world ends at the Hudson River.
Sure.
But the calls from back home of people getting murdered, put in prison, and so on. Just,
calls back home? You're talking about back in Detroit?
Back in Detroit, yeah. Okay. Calls back home. And it just led me to say, hey, I've got to build this break that I had when I was, you know, my second chance or third chance. So there it was, 2004, and I started working tirelessly to build Edwin's, which is a six-month training program, helping men and women out of prison, out of poverty, someone who really wants a second chance at life. We run someone through business basics. You know, we go through culinary math, gastronomy, serve safe. But then we start putting, you know, someone in each position in the restaurant and rotate them throughout.
Wow.
Until they see the whole business front and back.
So how long does this institute last for a given period of time?
This is 6 months long. 6 months long, about 4 days a week. You know, you're working anywhere between 40 and 60 hours.
Sure.
It's up the gut. It's aggressive. You know, we have at the end of this, you know, over 50 jobs waiting to hire. So there's no shortage of people hiring leaders from our institute. We've also got, you know, a 1% recidivism rate. So someone who's coming out of prison is just not going back. But the institute doesn't stop and end with the education, because we know that it's really a steam if you have to build in a short time.
Sure.
So, you know, we have a case manager, we have a handwriting analysis expert who's like a confidence booster. So the tricks and trades that we're throwing at someone to get them to where they want to be is pretty powerful.
You're almost doing a formation program as opposed to just a job skill training program, which is kind of what I'd like to do with my foundation, which is why I'm here talking to you right now. You premiered this knife skills documentary, Academy nominated, short documentary category.
Correct.
Tell me a little bit about that, and where can people watch it?
You can see it anywhere now. You go iTunes, you go Amazon, I mean, you name it, it's out there now. It's a very powerful film, you
sure.
know, from when we show it in prison to here, you know, to the public in Baltimore. No matter where it goes, it really really cuts deep.
What's the premise of it?
The idea is, it was the founding of the restaurant. You know, so in 2013, when I opened up Edwin's, Thomas Lennon, he's already won an Oscar, been nominated 4 other times. He captured, you know, what this is, the difficulties of going through it. You know, not everyone makes it through the program.
Well, I think, you know, part of it is you received a lucky break, right? I mean, you were how old again?
18
years old.
19, yeah.
You got into a little bit of trouble, and then you encountered someone who was willing to take you under their wing.
Correct.
That doesn't happen a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, mentoring is obviously something you hope to do on a bigger scale, because you're taking in how many people at one time?
You got anywhere between 40 and 60.
40 to 60 people. So you're kind of looking over them, almost like a big brother.
Bingo.
You helped them through for 6 months, but then you obviously had some other chances that a lot of people don't have. You traveled.
Yeah.
How did you get a chance to do that, by the way?
Well, I mean, you know, thank God for everything. My life took some unusual twists and turns. You know, I was at culinary school, and I had this woman come up to me. She said, "Well, do you want to be our chef? We need someone to cook for us on the weekends." I said, "All right." I mean, I was already working a job. I'll take another. I started working for this couple, and over the course of, you know, I don't know, about 9 months, they were the owners of Sweet and Low Sugar, sugar foods company, Blue Diamond Almonds.
Sure.
I mean, they paid
That's
me.
That's big.
Yeah, and what they paid me allowed me to save up money to go away.
Yeah.
And that's how I got to go to Paris.
And these are opportunities a lot of people don't have. And I'm going to just
come on, man. No, not at all.
And you had something going for you.
Mm-hmm.
Back, I mean, right now, you are a tall... You look like Dolph Lundgren. I mean, you had some privileges.
Sure.
But now you're
sure.
working with people who might not have those privileges, so to speak. A lot of people who are minorities, correct?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's over, you know, 80% of our student base.
That's amazing. And so you're just looking past all of this, seeing that food cuts right to the core and it can help people. You come back to America, start off back in Chicago, though?
No, New York.
In New York.
Yeah, went back to Manhattan.
Tell me about that. Tell me that process from New York to Cleveland.
It was good. It was good. I mean, New York it's a great place. I mean, it's still the premier place for food.
So what did you do there?
At La Cirque, I was a poissonnier, so I'd work on, I was a chef de partie.
Yeah.
I'm at the fish station, and then I was at Picheline as a saucier. And then I worked at Chanterelle and ended up switching to the front of the house. Became a sommelier. Worked under master sommelier Roger Dalgorn.
You're kidding. So you've got all that.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
So yeah, I'm a pretty bad man, if you call it in terms. But New York was great. But what it taught me was, let me go back and let me tell you what France taught me. Hard work.
Please.
Hard work doesn't have a language. I went over there illiterate. I took a one-way ticket. I just started working in the restaurants.
And, I mean, literally, did you have a plan or you just showed up?
I just knew I was going to. I knew I talked to his chef. He said he'd receive me. He didn't remember me when I came there. I thought I was really screwed. So I sat down for like, 45 minutes. He had me wait. And he's like, all right, just come on in. No one looked at me differently because I had fundamentals and I worked my ass off. I outworked everyone in that kitchen. That goes about beyond race. That goes beyond ethnicity. That goes beyond gender. Hard work does not have a language. So
I love that.
In a kitchen, it's a very open space, both mentally and physically, where you can move up, you can move left, you can move right.
A lot of people don't realize this, and that's one of the reasons why I promote the Olive Mass. Some way the church being able to support spiritually people in the industry. You guys are working your butt off. Yeah. I mean, even just to be a saucier, making a sauce, we think, oh God, what takes like 5 minutes? How long were you a saucier?
That was for a year at Pichelin, and I worked other positions, but those are 14-hour days.
People don't realize that you'll be working a year making sauces.
Oh, right, and you still don't got it. I mean, someone's got to roast those bones. Someone's got to refresh everything. Someone's got to make this soup. I mean, so it's just, that was probably the best position I ever loved that position. But it was also the hardest. It was also the hardest. I mean, harder than working a line, harder than being a sous chef, a chef. I mean, it was the most grueling position.
It sounds pretty grueling. Now, you come back to New York and you're, again, trying to make a name for yourself. By this point, can you give me about the year that this was happening?
Well, it's about 2003. No, it's 2004.
All right.
2005.
By 2004, the Food Network is exploding. Mm. What were your thoughts on all of that? The celebrity chefs and the competitions? Did you get involved in any of that?
No, I mean, I still don't have a TV to this day. I haven't had TV for over a decade.
What do you mean by that? You don't own
no
a TV?
Yeah, no television in the house. My wife's happy with that, too.
And you have two children at this stage in your life.
Yeah. I mean, everyone else has got one. So, I mean, if there's a privilege to watch television, we'll be over the, their grandparents' house or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
What does it do?
I mean, for you.
Because
technically, you're a celebrity chef. Or would you disagree with that title?
If it's self-appointed, I would disagree. If it's appointed by the general public, then I have no choice. But
that's an awesome answer.
I've done everything I can to keep that network out of our restaurant. I've done everything I can to keep the MSNBCs, these reality TV shows. I mean, I've said no to dozens of media because they don't portray the mission in the right light. Now, as far as cuisine goes, they've promoted it in an awkward light.
Huh. Tell me about that.
I don't think they focus on the soul of the cuisine. I mean, if you ask 100 chefs, who's Marc Veyrat, who's Roger Verger, they shrug their shoulders.
They wouldn't know.
These are the best chefs the earth has seen or has.
And right now, we are going to take a little break because our food has arrived. So we'll be back with more Shoot the Shiitake and Chef Brandon Krostowski. If you are anywhere near the Baltimore, Maryland area on Monday, October 29th, I invite you to the Olive Mass, celebrating food and blessing those who prepare it and serve it. It is an opportunity that the Catholic Church is providing for anyone in the hospitality industry, whether you're a chef, whether you are in front of the house, back of the house, washing dishes, anyone who might be a bartender, any waiters, anyone who is truly using the gift of hospitality to bring good into this world. We invite you to this Mass at the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary. It starts at 10 a.m. There will be a couple bishops there. I'll be preaching. And then we have an amazing reception at 11:30 right across the street at the Catholic Center. And there you'll actually get a chance to meet Chef Brandon Krostowski and a few other people using their gift of hospitality and bringing healing to this world. So if you are interested to come, all you got to do is visit us at thetablefoundation.org. And I'll see you on Monday, October 29th for the Olive Mass in Baltimore. And we are back here with a little bit of a deep dish discussion with the founder, CEO, and president of Edwin's Leadership and Restaurant Institute in Cleveland, Ohio, a place that not only serves amazing French cuisine, but it's a place where 40 to 60 men and women coming out of the prison system are being classically trained and getting a ton of experiences, but more importantly, they're receiving formation on how to be a successful person, mm-hmm. whether they're in the food industry or not, correct?
That's right. You got it.
Okay. And so as we kind of took a little bit of a break because our food arrived, let me ask you, how did they do here in Baltimore?
It was all right, man. That was a nice area waffle. I won't forget it. I won't forget it.
Eat this waffle in memory of me. Okay. And that's kind of what I was getting at right before we took a break. This just idea of all of these experiences that you had. You go back to New York City and, you know, it's just the Food Network is growing.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm.
And celebrity status mm-hmm. is there. What made you just kind of not buy a TV?
Yeah, you know, I found out maybe I wasn't always the brightest, right? I mean, you know, maybe I have some wits about me, but maybe I wasn't always the brightest, but I was always the hardest working. I barely graduated high school. So, I mean, when you start looking back at your past, you say, well, was I smart? Well, I don't know. I barely graduated high school, right? But I was always the hardest working. And I also learned early, and this was in Europe, being in solitude, that you have to trust your instincts. And if you blur what's between your instincts and your mind, you tend to make a wrong move or a bad decision.
Okay.
Even if it's a small thing, like maybe cooking a steak too long or you know, reducing a sauce a little too much, like your body knows when that sauce is ready. Your body knows when something is done. It's your mind that tricks you out of it. Mm-hmm. And so I thought the best and clearest way to stay in tune with who I am, to create an edge. Again, I've always been focused on being the best. I wanted to be the greatest, right? You always look for that edge.
And what does that exactly mean? How would you know that you are the mm-hmm. best and the greatest? Because you name some well-known chefs mm-hmm. in the industry, yeah. but the Food Network don't do feature stories about them. They're not iron chefs.
No, well, that's their focus. I mean, their focus is ratings. Of, you know, who's got more gel in their hair?
Wait a minute. Like, I use a little hairspray. Okay.
you got to pass. You get pardoned. But they're not. They're focused on the loud and sure. obnoxious, not the subtle and you know, the touch of the cuisine. They're not focused on that because, you know, quite frankly, it doesn't sell. But, you know, when you, how would you say you're the best, the great? It's just your intimacy with you and that cuisine. You know, working with the, you know, Repairs of the World, the Cendrillons, the Trotters, the
Well, you mentioned of a food.
Yeah.
And what does that mean? And soul food is a thing now in America.
Sure.
But what
sure.
do you mean by it?
I mean, the soul of the food is essentially, you know, where this product has come from and the origins. And not the flashy story maybe that you hear about a product or a dish. It's the origins of where this dish comes from. And if you can tap into that with your mind, body, and soul, and work with that product to produce a dish that is of the land, of that tradition, to me that's the soul of the cuisine. It's maximizing with a cooking technique all the flavor of what the land's produced.
Okay.
It's you know, taking that subtle bit of red wine.
Dude, but you know what? You're talking about like hours in a kitchen. Some people would be bored to death or they would be tragically plagued by being punished because they're working in the kitchen. You're behind the scenes, right?
Yeah, you're putting your listeners to sleep already.
No, not at all. No,
but you know what I mean. It's a gentle touch of, like I said, like a spark of red wine coming through on a sauce or a gentle texture like that waffle that we just shared. It's just like, you know, there's little pleasures in life that only the land can produce with hands.
The simple things in life. You see, for me as a Catholic priest, you're literally preaching to me a message, just paying attention to the subtleties and how there's something mysterious and powerful and beautiful. But what then brought you to Cleveland? You're not from Cleveland.
No.
What's up with that?
Looking at this project, no one's ever built this before, so there's no playbook. I just looked at where my body said to go and what my mind followed, and I ended up looking for the worst high school graduation rate in the country, and then there was.
Wait a second. How old were you?
When I wrote the business plan, that was 2004. So I had 22, 23.
You are 22 years old. 24 years old. 24. You would have perhaps just even graduated college yourself, mm-hmm. and you said to yourself, mm-hmm. I want to go to a city where they have the worst graduate. Dude, does this sound normal?
maybe not, but to me it does. I guess no one's ever said it like that.
Well, I mean, I'm a priest. I'm going to be very blunt. Because if some guy comes to me and says, hey, Father Leo, my kid, 22 years old, he got in a little bit of trouble. Now he's a pretty good chef. He's a great chef, actually. He wants to go to a place that has the worst high school graduation rate.
Yeah.
And tell me about that and how you get to Edwin's.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, you know, long nights, you know, early mornings of building a plan, building a network, building a curriculum, building this, you know, building this school essentially around my life and what I learned at the, and what I learned at the Culinary Institute of America. And just started working in prisons. I started teaching class in Grafton Institute, which
is showed up and said, knock, can I work in your prison?
I said, yes, I've got this class and this approach that I believe can work, and I'll do it for free. And I started, I took a class of 30 men.
I got to laugh here. Yeah. You're a chef who wanted to work for free.
Well, if you're a great chef, you know what staging is all about. You know,
tell me about that, because my listeners might not know what that is.
Well, when you stage, you know, that's how you get under the wing of the great ones. You say, I'd like to stage. You know, you don't get paid. I used to stage every weekend in New York, and you know, for Danielle and these guys, and just, you know, you pick beans in a corner and you slowly work your way up over time.
And
but
by
you,
the
you
words,
see it.
Stage is it. Just basically staging. You're just basically putting yourself there.
Yep.
And getting the experience from it, and you don't get paid.
Nope.
But
nope.
You had already experience, and you were basically staging for ex-cons.
Mm-hmm.
What was that fascination about? Mm-hmm.
Just looking at someone's life and the potential that they have, and how that, you know, where they're at or the way they feel is limiting that potential that a human being has. And it was just about fulfilling it, and that was it.
And you also mentioned before we took this break how, you know, you had been asked by many other big networks to kind of cover you, and you turned them down, but you're willing to do a Shoot the Shiitake with me. This is pretty awesome. Why would you even think about that?
We connected Stephen Albright, a great man that, you know, obviously you mentor and you know so well. He had to come to Cleveland to check out Edwin's. We connected there, and you know, your birds of a feather flock together, so I don't think you'd be so bad.
Yeah, well, I mean, you have bigger feathers than I do. You're a taller man. You've got great, amazing skill. Now, here's what I want to do is talk about what you're in the position of teaching.
Yeah.
But what have you learned from this experience at Edwin's?
You know, I learned that the hardest thing to do in this isn't teach the skill. So, you know, for those of you out there who, you know, who make a, you know, great bouillabaisse or a fantastic knife cut, like, you know, anyone can achieve that with hard work. I believe it's the esteem is the hardest thing to build.
Esteem.
That poverty or prisons ripped away.
Did you struggle with low esteem at any point in your life?
I didn't. I've always been confident in who I am, but I also know who I am. I don't think I'm, you know, the highest, you know, I'm not no king. I'm not, I know I don't come from, you know, great means, and I'm very content with that, but I know very well who I am, and I'm proud of that. I don't look at myself as this, you know.
Just a real quick background of your family. Yeah, Tell me about your family background.
Mother, you know, she's alcoholic, you know, two generations, three generations, so it ran the family. You know, she buried everyone from that disease. She's still living. But single mother raising three boys, you know, that was the background.
And your brothers, are they making it, or are they?
Oh, they're doing good, man. They're doing good. One of them's actually an engineer. The other works with computers.
So she struggled, but she obviously did a good enough job considering this. Praise God for that.
Hard working, yeah.
Now, you know, you talk a little bit about this motivation, how you discern doing this unique work.
Mm-hmm.
What's your inspiration, though, to it all?
Just that I'm here. You know, I feel very, very grateful to be here. You know, a lot of mentors that you know, the people who taught me to become a man in those formative years in Detroit, you know, you're dead or in prison, and, you know, you're not going to see them. You know, just to have life and have breath. I mean, that's all I really need.
You kind of sound like a spiritual person, and I didn't really quite ask you about that. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I'm not asking you, but tell me, that sounds like inspiration, and that word means in the spirit.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
Do you have a spiritual-ish background?
Yeah.
Or what is that?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I've been Catholic. Ah. I'm Catholic. I've been Catholic for years, and you know, the way that fate found me was maybe a little different than how other people. I didn't make my confirmation. I went back when I was in school. I was like 23 when I made the confirmation.
Really?
Because I just felt I need to do that. I never did it, and you know, I try to stay as best I can to the you know, to the church. And you know, we're not perfect. You know that.
No, so. Neither am I, and I work for them. But listen, I mean, I was actually surprised by that, because see, what you have done is you've kind of not talked about your Catholicism, but you have actually showed it. What can you tell the church? Mm-hmm. I mean, if this is, you have a chance, you got a microphone, and you have literally a congregate of a priest willing to listen to you. And in a way, you are preaching.
Yeah.
I mean, you do see that. Like when a chef presents, they're literally preaching a message to a history, innovation, and inspiration all in one plate. What can you tell me? How would you preach to me?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think the church does a very good job of upholding a message. I would just reinforce, just, you know, continue to practice what you preach. You know, if it's forgiveness, forgive. And I'm not saying the Catholic Church does not, but you know, just practice what you preach, right? And if you do, what you have is, you know, the world that we all aspire to be and to live in. And I think the Catholic Church does a good job of that. But I think we all need to be reminded of that at times.
How do you kind of practice that forgiveness? Because what you're doing is, in a sense, giving men and women a second chance.
Mm-hmm.
What's your policy for accepting them?
You know, don't ask, don't tell. So we don't, we just ask someone, hey, have you been in the justice system? Yes, okay. You know, you're a good fit for the program, but we don't ever get into offense. What someone's done.
So even if someone has a sex offense on their record?
Don't ask. We don't care. Hey, look, if someone wants to move forward, it's about meeting somebody where they're at.
Has that kind of
moving forward
bit you on the backside at all?
No. I mean, the cost, I mean, recidivism is 1%.
That's amazing.
Which nationally you have 44%. For those that don't know, recidivism is the rate of return back to prison. Oftentimes they measure within a 2 to 3 year period. That's lower than anything else that's we found in the United States. We found that the overall culture that we build, the cost, you know, I run at or below cost of any other restaurant that I've ran or had in the past. There's a care within the culture because there's trust within the culture.
So there's a trust and a care and there's a high level of forgiveness to the point where you're not even asking what your offense is. So you might have people who are rapists, even perhaps even child abusers, and perhaps even murderers.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, and you put a knife in their hand.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do people ever say, you're nuts?
Mm-hmm. At the beginning, absolutely. It was like this spectacle, and I just, you know, again, not being in touch with media, you don't even know what's going on. You just know the course that you're on, and that's a huge benefit.
Wow.
When I decided to build housing in 2015, I was fed up with, you know, asking more of somebody, and then they're going home to a shelter or a back of a car or some toxic environment. So I said, well, we're building housing, and I definitely got the crazy look again. And but in 3 months, raised over $1 million. And got 3 buildings, and 6 months after opened them up, and we to this day we still have free housing for students, and graduates have a separate house they pay to live in. There's a fitness center, a library, test kitchen.
Gosh, I think I need to pay rent there or something, man.
We'll charge you. Charge you.
Listen, you've got this amazing program going. What's next for Chef Brandon? You've got, obviously, your wife and your two children.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, how do you spend time with them? Because that's one of the big struggles with chefs.
Yeah, I don't as much as I should. I'm well aware of that.
Yeah, every chef is.
Yeah. You know, I'm 38 now. You know, we met, we got married, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. So it was kind of late. And then, we had kids. You know, Leo's 3 now.
What? Who?
Leo.
You have a boy named Leo?
Yeah, he's...
he's probably taller than I am.
He's going to be there. He's getting there. Yeah, it was Leo and Lily, but Leo is...
That is awesome. I knew I liked you, Chef Brandon. That's pretty intense.
My wife, I found someone who accepts me for who I am and the mission that I'm on. And that's tough. I didn't think that would ever happen, given the hours that, you know, that I put into this and the commitment and the focus.
Yeah.
Out there, there's somebody. And you, I suppose, have to just be patient, right?
Sure. Well, listen.
Yeah.
You're doing amazing things. And when I asked you what's next... You already have, what, 3 restaurants? Can you explain those real quickly?
So, yeah. Edwin's a school and the restaurant. That's the only one. I opened up a restaurant, and this is just like kind of consulting. Like, we're in Michael Mina's, you know, Four Seasons.
Sure.
It's more of a consulting role, but it's for people in recovery. That opened up 2 months ago.
Did you ever struggle with recovery?
No, I was never on that.
So that wasn't your thing? Because you're a sommelier as well. So.
Yep. That was never my bag, but I recognize the issue that it's caused, and, you know, you see the bodies. It's a mess. And there's a way to beat this back. And so we're trying that, and it's going well. I just got a 4th building next to the campus and halfway up that fundraising ladder to build out a butcher shop. So the future looks like
building
out all the small trades like butchery, bakery, while taking those profits to sustain the school, building the neighborhood that needs it, but also strengthen our student with the lessons.
And so how can people get involved, be part of it, and even donate if they want to?
Yeah, I mean, edwinsrestaurant.org.
Edwinsrestaurant.org.
Yeah, just go there. You check it out. You follow that.
And I'll be posting all of that, of course, on my social media at Father Leo Feeds. What a privilege to talk to Chef Brandon Krastowski, founder, president, and CEO of Edwin's Leadership and Restaurant Institute. You can watch his Academy-nominated short documentary called Knife Skills. And is there any kind of last-minute thought that you would like to leave for our listeners or with me, who kind of... I'm looking at you with awe right now.
Mm-hmm. No, just spread the word for the right reasons. You know, I just gave a commencement speech over at the College Institute of America last week. I told us the graduate class, don't be pricks. You
know, absolutely.
You've got a tremendous amount of knowledge, and share that with others. You know, who maybe not have had that access or opportunity to that education. And share it, because if you don't, we're only as good as that last and weakest link.
Dude, I love it. Yeah. And please pray for me that I never be a prick.
It's on record.
That is totally on record. And seriously, I'm going to ask you for your prayers, and sure, as I'll assure you of mine.
Thank you.
And when we come back, I'm going to come back with my carryout order. What did I learn from all of this? And more importantly, how did Chef Brandon preach to me a message that really just cut to my heart, my soul, so that I can go around and feed and share this good news with others? We'll be back with more Shoot the Shiitake with my deep dish discussion in just a minute. Thank you to all of our premium subscribers. That's people who donate $10 or more each month. And this week, you're going to be receiving a little bit more about what formation means. It is basically a term that we use in seminary when you are preparing someone for the priesthood or for someone who's becoming a nun. But honestly, it's what every family should be doing, providing not just information, but formation. So you can learn more about that and hear that specific topic and presentation by me, who was in charge of formation, just by going to support us at shoottheshiitake.com or at fatherleofeeds.com/listen. And we thank you for your support. And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo, for this deep dish discussion and just having this opportunity to chat with Chef Brandon Krastowski. Few things that I learned. As a matter of fact, many things I learned. This guy is the real deal. I've met many chefs, and so many of them are so noble and good, and they really do possess a humility. Even though he is really well known, he shuns the spotlight, and good for him, especially in this time in our world's history where if anyone is great, there's almost like a desire to tear them down, revealing some of their past brokenness. I mean, whether you're a Supreme Court nominee or a priest, or obviously even the chef world has experienced the hashtag MeToo struggles. But the fact is, we're all broken. And Chef Brandon kind of knows that, and he tapped into it. He didn't let it overcome him. As a matter of fact, he took everything he learned from those moments of humiliation and turned it into humility, which is really the greatest teacher you can have. And so in his humility, and I definitely see him as a humble man, even though he's doing amazing things, and I'm sure that the success of his restaurant and also just being featured in this Academy acclaimed and nominated short documentary, it could go to somebody's head. It would go to my head, I'll be very honest with you, but that's why I'm so glad he said, don't be a prick. I just love that. Don't be a prick. That is just great news for everybody. It's basically, it's I guess what happens when you recognize your talent, but you don't use it to serve others. You know, so first of all, I'm just glad that he was very real, very honest with me. I'll also say this, I really enjoy just having breakfast with him, and it really won my heart when I made him laugh a few times. You know, he's a pretty intense dude. He's actually very intense, but he's kind of pretty down to earth at the same time. But you also know that he's a deep thinker. He's a very reflective person, which is why I was so grateful that he kind of jumped into this whole conversation about discernment. Now, he didn't use that term, but he was talking about it, especially when I asked him the question about what does it mean to be the best and the greatest? And then he said getting in touch with the soul of food. And he used kind of phrases such as awareness, a gentle touch, and then of course he talked about the simple things in life. The fact is, he's talking about discernment. And that's actually something that I'm going to be talking about for all of our premium subscribers, what formation requires and what discernment looks like. How do you do it? How do you pay attention to it? Now, I'm no expert at it, but I am trying to discern all the time the subtle things in life, because that's how God speaks to us. You know, and oftentimes I think when we are reflective people, we say less and we do more. We pay more attention to things and we kind of take it in and it becomes a part of us. And so when he was basically staging or stodging, and I guess I don't know if that would be the way to describe it, you know, but when he was staging, you know, for other chefs, you'd work for free, and all you've got to do is just do what you're told to do and you pay attention. And you basically do the same thing a lot for a long period of time and you do it for free. That's kind of what it means to be a disciple. And a disciple is someone who discerns. And I think one of the reasons why Chef Brandon is great at his craft is because he was a disciple for many years. And now what he's doing is he is forming disciples in a way. And that word basically means, from the Greek, discipulos, students, where we get the word discipline. You know, I was actually really impressed that he doesn't even have a TV. That's kind of impressive. And he saw TV as a special thing that his kids will have a chance to do if they visit, you know, their grandparents. And of course, I like Chef Brandon even more because he named his kid after me. I'm kidding. He didn't do that. But he, you know, his kid's name's Leo. And that just kind of warmed my heart a little bit, because that's a name that people don't really, you know, name their kids. It's an old man's name is what I was told it was. But I guess what impressed me the most was that he's Catholic. I mean, not that he's Catholic, but he never mentioned Catholicism to me. And I never even asked him. His faith was so much a part of him, and I could kind of detect that there was real goodness in him, but I had no idea that he was Catholic, and I'm being very honest with you. I had no idea he was Catholic. The only reason why I met him was because my chef Steve, and you could actually hear about him in a previous episode, made contact with him because Chef Steve and I are working on a project called the Table Foundation House, which is going to be a breakfast and lunch cafe in the Baltimore area. We're going to make amazing food. You know, it's not going to be elite French cuisine with all the details. It's just going to be a lot of darn good comfort food based on recipes from my travels and my experiences. And Chef Steve and I want to get this started, but we really want to make it a formation house, similar, maybe not to the degree that Chef Brandon is doing, but similar to what he's doing, because we want to just hire only ex-convicts, people coming out of the prison system. They are better known as returning citizens, right? That's what we want to do. And in the evenings, we still want to have dinner service, but not the way you would imagine. It would be a prefixed menus, and it would be with chefs coming from around the country and around the world, and kind of like a James Beard house, they would cook and they would share their message. And they would share a message with people who buy tickets, you know, for this dinner. And more importantly, they would be working with the people we work with, you know, the people that we're hiring, basically our disciples, our students, and they would be mentoring them just by being in their presence and sharing with them their stories. And so it is like literally a win-win-win situation. That's what we want to do. We want to make really awesome food and get sinners and saints eating together. Two, we want to get a place where formation can occur. And that means, again, not just teaching people life skills, but helping people to understand who they are, and integration of information. But it requires us to know where we're getting our information from. Is it just a textbook? No. It's also from relationships. It's also by what we put into our mind with the entertainment that we watch. And I'm not saying that you can't watch certain things, but like if you're watching something that's not good or pure, how does that integrate into your person? And it's obviously better not to let those things enter into your brain, but obviously sometimes they do. So that's what formation does. But we don't only want to make like amazing food so that people can come together and eat, and also provide formation for our interns, so to speak, or our students, but we also want to to have chefs have an opportunity to preach. You know, like Chef Brandon was just so eloquent. And not all chefs are going to be as eloquent as Chef Brandon, but they have a message. And if we can provide a place for them to cook their food and just tell their story in between courses, what's that going to do for the chef and for the people eating their food? Well, I'll tell you what it's going to do. It's going to help people to understand that chefs are not about just the food they make. They're really about the people that they're feeding and the people who have influenced their lives and therefore their cuisine. Yeah, that is the soul of food. And I'm not a great chef. I mean, I'm barely one. And I do take people seriously. And more importantly, I take chefs seriously, which is why we're hosting something called the Olive Mass. And the Olive Mass is going to be an opportunity for people in the hospitality industry to come together and to celebrate. I got to be honest with you. Chefs are sometimes the most unthanked people in the world. Anyone working in the hospitality industry, they'll tell you it's a thankless job. Now, I mean, you might get a tip if you're a good waiter and if you're a real good chef and you're personable enough that you want to go out and meet the people you're serving, then yeah, it can be a really great life. But for the most part, people who are working in the hospitality industry, whether they're the ones who kind of change your bed sheets in the hotels or if they are washing dishes in the back, that could be a thankless job. And then, you know, what a chef has to do or what the wait staff has to do is they sometimes have to make your day by bringing you great food and great service. And that's not easy to do. I mean, can you imagine if a chef had a bad day? The food is not gonna taste good. And I got to tell you, especially in this world where everyone is like a critic, a food critic. I mean, you could just like Yelp somebody and their life could be ruined with a bad review. Well, I mean, what I'm trying to do is bring people together and celebrate them. So celebrating food and blessing the hands of those who prepare it and serve it is what the Olive Mass is all about. And why? Because the Catholic Church actually has masses in honor of other professions that really help to form culture. So for example, the White Mass is for doctors and anyone in the medical field. And so all of these physicians and nurses and, you know, owners of hospitals and CEOs, they come and they basically celebrate together. And not everyone is Catholic because you don't have to be blessed. You know, you just have to know that what you're doing is a worthy calling. And that's why the church even offers the Red Mass. And that's for people who are in the legal field, whether you're a lawyer or a judge or a clerk, you come together for the Red Mass and you just get inspired. You realize that what you're doing isn't just to bring human justice, but even perhaps even a divine justice to people. And then that's why the church has what is called the Blue Mass. And that is an opportunity for anyone in the civil service. So whether you're police or firefighter, or if you're in the military, you come together for what is called the Blue Mass. Now, not every diocese has it, but the major dioceses do. And so the Archdiocese of Baltimore is one. The Archdiocese of New Orleans is one, which is why we hosted the first Olive Mass ever in New Orleans for 2 years in the Cathedral of St. Louis, King of France, right at the heart of the French Quarter. Archbishop Amon was the celebrant for these past 2 years, and we had chefs from around the country and around the world go to the Olive Mass in New Orleans, and now we're taking it to Baltimore on October 29th. 2018 at the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary at 10 o'clock a.m. with a reception to follow at 11:30 at the Catholic Center. And guess what? Chef Brandon is going to be there with a few other chefs and other people in the industry. They're movers and shakers, and they're going to actually sit on a panel, and we're going to get a chance to hear about them, learn about who they are and what they do. And at the same time, we're going to have a chance to ask them questions. And it's just a really great opportunity for anyone who cares about food, anyone who's in the hospitality industry, anyone, if you're even a bartender, you got to come to this Olive Mass and realize that what you're doing, you make a difference for the good.
I mean, just think about what a bartender does. Not get people drunk, but, you know, the stereotype is that they're listeners and that they provide company for people. But they also have a responsibility to cut people off and also have a responsibility to help people to celebrate responsibly. And so this idea of the Olive Mass, while it might sound kitschy, it's exactly what I'm supposed to be doing as a priest. I mean, I've been paying attention to the subtleties in my life, and I'm realizing that my love for food, but more importantly, my love for hospitality has encouraged me to host this international movement of Plating Grace, to make sure that the conversations that we have around the dinner table turn into conversion, which is why I'm doing the Shoot the Shiitake audio casts. But then making sure that my priesthood isn't being obfuscated by my love for food and cooking on TV and all that stuff, but making sure it's a part of it. And that's why the Olive Mass is such a powerful part of who I am as a priest. And so I sincerely ask you to come. I sincerely ask you to learn more about it. And I sincerely ask you to support it. You know, if you want to, for example, help support us and maybe invite a chef to it, that would be awesome. Tell them all about it. And then you could even, for example, take out an ad or maybe like something in our program, which will help support the Table Foundation and our mission, but do something to help recognize a chef in your life, you know? And so this just is kind of like the start. This is only our third year doing it, our second place doing it. Again, we did it 2 years in a row in New Orleans, and it was just so well received because, hey, in New Orleans, like food and faith, they just go perfectly together. And it's so interesting that the French Quarter, which is not known for fidelity, has in its shadows always the beauty of the Catholic faith and obviously the spires of St. Louis, King of France Cathedral. And in Baltimore, where we've had a lot of struggles, you know, hearing from Chef Brandon, he can really help us to learn about what we need to do with the Table Foundation to get a program similar to his in the Baltimore area and perhaps even in other states and certainly in other dioceses. So we hope if you were listening to this that, first of all, you enjoyed this conversation with Chef Brandon. I certainly did, and I learned a lot. And dude, let me tell you, he's a real deal. I mean, if anyone can tell a priest not to be a prick and to do it with such humility and with such love, which was so evident in how he was talking about how he cared for these people under him, his disciples, his students in a way, and helping them to literally become the best version of themselves through their education, but also a formation program. So I hope you enjoyed this episode of Shoot the Shiitake. And again, I can't thank you enough for being a part of the movement and to support us in any way possible, and also to come to the Olive Mass on October 29th, 2018. And between now and the next time we shoot the shiitake, stay hungry. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Shoot the Shiitake, brought to you by thetablefoundation.org, harvesting the power of food to do good. And please make sure that you encourage others to subscribe to this podcast on their favorite podcast platform, to encourage others to listen to the show, whether they're family, friends, your priest, your preacher, or your fellow parishioners. And of course, we always want to say thank you to our premium subscribers and encourage you, if you are listening and enjoying the show, to please support us with a donation of $10 each month. You'll be able to receive premium content, especially the special one this week, all about formation. And what we're trying to do is encourage conversations that lead to conversion.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media. Find more about us at breadboxmedia.com.